appeals. This is case number three on our oral argument calendar today. We have three non-oral matters as well. Judges Ross and Kirk are joining me. Judge Sleater is presiding in this matter, June 23. We are proceeding by Zoom. And as you heard, the digital lady, we're recording this proceeding, and it will be on the judicial branch's website within 24 hours. So any other recording is prohibited. We do ask counsel to keep an eye on the time clock you should see somewhere on your screen, because the formats otherwise are typical, as if we were in person, 15 minutes apiece and then 5 minutes of rebuttal if a counsel for appellant wishes to exercise that. And so we do ask counsel, when you begin, to identify yourself for the record. I'll note for the record, A220270 is the case file number in the matter of the civil commitment of Michael Dwayne Persecki. And so, counsel for Mr. Persecki, you may identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, judges. My name is Tom Kramer, Thomas G. Kramer. I'm an attorney out in Granite Falls, Minnesota. I'm here representing Michael Persecki, as Judge Sleater indicated. Mr. Persecki was committed as a sexually dangerous person back in 2012. He has recently gone through the special review board process. The special review board made a recommendation for no reduction in his custodial status. He had asked for either a transfer to the community preparation process or a provisional discharge or a straight out discharge. The time came to decide about review by the commitment appeal panel. There was no action taken to make that appeal. The appeal panel then issued its order indicating that it would adopt the recommendations of the special review board. We are here asking this court to consider that there is a clear error on the part of the commitment appeal panel insofar as there is a factual basis for providing a reduction in custody as had been requested. There were presentations made at the
counsel, though. Getting back to the whole thing, isn't the problem here for your client that he's trying to dictate what his treatment is going to be, and he's just suspended any participation because he doesn't think it's doing him any good?
Yes, Judge, there is a component of that.
Doesn't that suggest he lacks insight into his circumstances and condition?
Suggest that, or it could be that he has some understanding of 10 years worth of commitment and some discrimination in determining that he is not receiving benefit from the programming that is being provided.
But do we let the subjects of those recommendations call the shots on what treatment's going to be?
Well, I think he certainly can't call the shots, I think that his the insight that he does have can be given some consideration.
But I look at cases I've dealt with in the past on these kinds of requests, and the person has meticulously followed all the treatment recommendations, and the recommendation still is that he's not ready to be released, and we've generally affirmed that. Now we've got a fellow that hasn't followed treatment recommendations for some time now and should be able to magically go to a less restrictive and perhaps less safe to the public alternative.
Well, I would ask the court to consider every individual as a unique individual, and that case that you identified certainly didn't go well. I don't know that we can ascribe that to Mr. Persecki.
May I continue, counsel?
Thank you, Judge. We had presented at the special review board a number of items relating to Mr. Persicky's conduct. I've tried to identify some of those within the brief. It certainly is identifying the best of the best within within the special review board process, but it is indicating that there have been some progress. There has been some progress by Mr. Persicky, and we wanted the court to be aware of a plan that he has. He's indicated a plan that provides some that does provide community safety. He's identified a number of halfway houses that would be opportunities for a safe assimilation into the community. He's talked about employment. He's talked about trying to manage his own self-care.
Mr. Kramer, can I ask you procedurally, Mr. Noss, in his response brief, and I didn't see you replied to it, but I wanted to hear your comment to it, that if I understood Mr. Noss correctly, that his belief that since there was not a request for a rehearing before the appellate panel, the commitment appellate panel, we've not only an objection to them holding a hearing and simply incorporating the special review board, but if I understood correctly, also waived an argument on the merits of the special review board's decision. I think I understood the first. I wasn't so sure about the second, and he'll explain that, I assume, in a few moments further, but do you have any response to that or comment in that regard?
Your Honor, I believe that there was no affirmative action taken to evidence a waiver. I don't believe that there was any intentional conduct by my client or by me to express that waiver. That wasn't our intention. It was his belief that moving forward to this stage was his best option. I just would object to this being considered a waiver.
Along those same lines, but in a somewhat different vein, I couldn't help but notice a difference of perspective or a difference of statement of what our perspective is when I saw the issue statements presented by both counsel. Your brief asks us to decide whether there was clear error. And the commissioner's position is that our perspective is one of abuse of discretion review, not one of clear error review. Can you more clearly state your position as to what you believe our standard of review is?
Your Honor, we were proceeding with the idea that we were looking at whether the adoption of the special review board was appropriate by the commitment appeal panel. And with that in mind, we were focusing on the clearly erroneous standard. I understand Mr. Noss has moved in a different direction with respect to this. I don't contest that that he's properly addressed the review standard. I just don't believe that that's where we should
be. Just so I understand, you're conceding that we look at this on an abuse of discretion standard, that we begin with the presumption of that there is discretion and in the commissioner's decision, and we are simply deciding whether or not the decision was within the range of discretion.
It wasn't my intention to concede, Your Honor. It was my thought that I was saying the argument that I'm making is that a clearly erroneous standard does apply.
Help me to understand the basis in law then that would cause us to apply a clear error standard as opposed to a abuse of discretion standard, and whether you think there's a difference as applied here.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I can't provide you that basis. It is my client's position that he believes that there is factual support for his reduction in care, and that the commitment appeal panel failed to recognize that, and that this court should direct a lesser custodial status, or that it should send the matter back to the commitment appeal panel for further review. That's our position, Your Honor. Thank you.
I see no other questions, and you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish, Mr. Kramer. And so, Mr. Nash, you may identify yourself for the record, who you represent. I'll note for the record, by the way, that the county itself, Human Services, chose not to brief. You may proceed, Mr. Nash.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Anthony Noss. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services in this case. Now, before getting into Mr. Kramer's arguments, to sum this up, this case is about a civilly committed person attempting to get this court to grant him a reduction in custody. And I believe only now today was the first time there was any reference by Mr. Persecki's counsel about asking for this matter to get perhaps sent down to the CAP for some other purpose, such as a hearing. So he's asking for reduction in custody, where he did not even request a hearing before the commitment appeal panel, which I'll call the CAP, or make any arguments to the CAP. The scope of appellate review here is extremely, extremely limited. This court cannot grant a reduction in custody under the circumstances of this case. The only issue potentially before this court is whether the CAP abused its discretion in not holding a hearing. But Mr. Persecki waived that issue by not requesting a hearing and by not briefing that issue in its principal brief. Regardless, the CAP didn't abuse its discretion. Even if this court could at this point address whether he should receive a reduction in custody, Mr. Persecki waived all arguments relating to that issue, again, because he didn't make arguments below at the CAP level.
Mr. Noskin, I did ask Mr. Kramer this too. I didn't see, and he didn't say this today either in Mr. Kramer's brief on behalf of his client, that they're contesting the non-holding of a hearing, but I didn't understand that from the statute to be required, because the appellate panel simply incorporated the findings of the special review board. So I assume it's those findings and records that Mr. Kramer is asking us to look at to determine whether an error, by whatever standard that we apply. Am I misstating what we are to do?
Well, I understand, Your Honor, that may be Mr. Persecki's position as to what the court should do. The commissioner's position is that by operation of statute, and most importantly, by Mr. Persecki's choices here, you know, he made the choice. He could have requested a hearing from the commitment appeal panel.
But does he have to? In other words, we know a decision to reduce custody isn't final until an appeal board either holds a hearing or confirms it. So I assume any appeal prior to that would be premature. And so is it a premise, a required premise, that before we review a special review board, that a committed person must appeal a special review board's decision?
Well, not necessarily
to the appellate review, in other words, ask for a rehearing, in other words.
Well, Your Honor, the commissioner's position isn't that a committed person cannot appeal to this court if there is no request for a hearing. The statute allows an appeal to this court from the commitment appeal panel's order under the circumstances of this case. However, when that appeal is taken, the scope of that review is rather narrow. And it's limited to this abuse of discretion as to whether the CAP erred in adopting or holding a hearing. So really the question is whether the CAP should have held a hearing. And that's the abuse of discretion standard of review.
So just to clarify that, if we, for instance, agreed with appellant's position that the record didn't support the recommendations, which is now incorporated by the appellate appeal panel, commitment appeal panel, aren't we allowed to consider that within the scope of our review? Or are you saying whether to hold a hearing or not is simply all we look at, but we know statutorily they don't have to if not requested. So I'm not sure. We'd have very little to do, I suspect, if I understand your argument.
That's right, Your Honor. This court really does have very little to do because under, this is in section 253D.28, subdivision 1A, when the SRB issues a recommendation, certain parties may file a petition for rehearing. If no party petitions within a certain amount of days, 30 days, then by statute, the CAP shall adopt the recommendation or set the matter on for hearing. So here the CAP decided to just adopt the recommendation. So the decision that the CAP had to make was between those two options. So that is the decision that's the only decision that's really properly potentially before this court. I mean,
let me spin it a little slightly different way. Couldn't we consider the fact of whether or not there was an abuse of discretion in failing to set a hearing if it is clear that the evidence doesn't support the findings? Wouldn't that be an abuse of discretion?
Well, Your Honor, abuse of discretion review, trying to look at what the a lower court abuses its discretion when its rulings are based on an erroneous view of the law or when the decision is against the facts in the record. So that's what would be guiding the court. I don't think it's really properly the clear air review. That's more of a if we're actually looking at the merits. My understanding,
you're saying the statute mandates only one of two options. Either you have a hearing or you adopt, and there's complete discretion as to whether to adopt or to set a hearing. And if no hearing is requested, there's really nothing to decide. Is that pretty much your argument?
Well, Your Honor, the commissioner's argument isn't going so far as to say there's complete discretion that's sort of immune from review by this court, but that decision is reviewed for an abuse of discretion.
I'm going back to Judge Leisure's question, then what in the commissioner's view are we reviewing for an abuse of discretion? What decision are we reviewing?
The decision of whether to hold a hearing or not. I think, Your Honor, maybe a better answer for the court might be, you know, just kind of hypothetically thinking, you know, could there be a case where there were, you know, very, very strong facts for a committed person, you know, various expert reports and whatnot below that this court could say, well, the decision to not hold the hearing was against the facts in the record, given this extremely overwhelmingly good evidence for the committed person. You know, perhaps that would be a grounds to find that the commitment appeal panel abuses discretion in not holding a hearing. I don't know if that kind of gets at what
I think it does get at what I'm asking. Is this a case of first impression as to what we're deciding here in this case? It doesn't seem like an unusual situation where a hearing has not been requested and we're just reviewing the ultimate findings. But it sounds like from what you're suggesting, since looking at the briefing, that there is no clear case actually telling us what we should be reviewing here. Am I correct that this is a case of first impression or not in your research?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not aware of a decision published or unpublished by this court about this specific procedural posture, but, you know, as to whether it's, you know, for example, a published case is needed or something like that, really this case is clearly, the court is clearly instructed by the statute here. It's clear as to what, you know, this very limited decision the panel had to make, and it did that. And there's case law that's in the commissioner's brief that is instructive that abuse of discretion is the proper standard of review as to this question. But to answer your question, Your Honor, I'm not personally aware of a case before this court where this exact sort of procedural posture has come up, presumably because most people actually request a hearing before the commitment appeal panel.
Mr. Nass, I'm going to follow up the same issue. I'm reading your legal issue as you stated it. Did the commitment appeal panel abuse its discretion when it adopted the special review board's recommendation and did not set the matter for a hearing? Now, if I read that correctly, it almost suggests to me that the two different issues, this kind of goes back to my original question. I didn't see that appellant was claiming error by not holding a hearing. But on that first part, how would we review whether there's an abuse of discretion by adopting a special review board's decision without looking at the special review board's decision to determine it was an abuse or not? I think it might be just a different way of asking the same question that Judge Ross asked you a moment ago, which is more eloquent by far than both my first and now following his. But do you understand?
I think so, Your Honor. And perhaps, you know, the way that the legal issue was phrased could have maybe, given what I've been saying today, maybe left out the first part. And, you know, because really what it is it's a decision between the two, whether it was an abuse of discretion. So I asked to whether, you know, as I think in my response to Judge Ross's question, does the abuse of discretion standard allow this court to acknowledge the facts in the record? And, you know, in certain circumstances, which is the case here, find that the fact that the CAP did not give the person decide to hold the hearing was an abuse of discretion. The answer to that from the commissioner's perspective is yes, that is possible. So at least it does seem there's some sort of look at the record.
Well, and just to follow up, the paragraph number one in the order of the appellate panel was the findings of fact and recommendation of the special review board dated October 1, 2021 are hereby adopted in their entirety and provide support for the panel's order. So wouldn't that necessarily mean we're looking at everything? Or at least the appeal panel suggested to us that they were looking at everything and we're looking at their order and they just didn't want to repeat it all.
Well, Your Honor, it would seem that yes, everything that happened at the SRB is part of the record, and I recall what you're saying about the CAPS order, where it was sort of incorporating the SRB recommendation. I just want to find that standard here again. So yes, I mean there can be an abuse of discretion if there's an erroneous view of the law or when the decision is against the facts in the record. But importantly here, Your Honor, even if, and a point I really want to make is even if this court were to find that there was an erroneous view of the law or this decision was against the facts in the record, the relief to be granted is to kick this back down to the CAP for a hearing, not to grant Mr. Persaki a reduction in custody. And that's a really important point. Another important point that is in Mr. Persecki's counsel's argument today, he noted that he was asking this court to find clear error, you know, even assuming that this gets to the level of analysis of clear error on the merits of the petition for reduction in custody. He wants this court to find clear error of the CAP insofar as there is a factual basis for providing a reduction in custody. Well, if that's Mr. Persecki's argument, that's not good enough for clear error. That's not what clear error is. It's very clear from this court, from, for example, the Kenney decision cited in the commissioner's brief, that, quote, the role of an appellate court is not to reweigh or inherently reweigh the evidence when applying a clear error review. So, you know, the fact that there might be, you know, a factual basis, that's not what a clear error review is. It's looking at the evidence as a whole. And there really was an argument by Mr. Persaki today under the actual legal standard. So, and as the commissioner has pointed out in her brief, even if this court goes to the merits, the evidence as a whole supports the CAP's order in this case, and the CAP should be affirmed. One moment. I see my time is up, so or 20 seconds left. So in closing, the commissioner asked that this court affirm the commitment appeal panel's order, affirming the SRB's recommendation and denying Mr. Persaki's petition for reduction in custody in its entirety. And if this court reverses, it should only be to remand this matter back to the CAP for an evidentiary hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Noss. And Mr. Kramer, you will now have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish to so choose to proceed. You may do so.
Just a couple comments, Your Honor. If the court is to adopt the abuse of discretion standard, it submitted that there does need to be some weighing of the SRB findings in making that determination of whether there has been an abuse of discretion. The statute clearly says adopt or call for a hearing. It can't be mean that there's a flip of the coin here. There would have to be some kind of review by the commitment appeal panel, and this court would be reviewing whether the commitment appeal panel abused its discretion in that review and failing to recognize the plan that Mr. Persaki presented. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions and the briefing in the matter. We will take the matter under advisement, issue an order within 90 days. And we are concluding our oral calendar at this point and proceeding on our non-oral matters. So you each have a good day.
Thank you, Carl.